Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN, where we live, housing affordability in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. Robert Leon lives with his parents in Kendall. He's 26 years old and has been working at Yahoo for 3 years. He wants to buy his own place and move out. He's been looking at condos for about a year. He's even put in 3 contracts on places, but none of them have worked out so far.
So the first one, we put in an offer and we went through the inspections, the appraisal, and the problem with that one ended up being that the house appraised for about $60,000 less, and the seller wouldn't take that little money, and I couldn't get financing for anything above that. So that one fell through.
Not a unique situation in South Florida's competitive residential real estate market. In the rush to buy a home, it's not uncommon to have a bank tell a buyer it thinks the house they want to buy is worth less than what they've agreed to pay for it.
The second house we put the contract in, the repairs ended up being over $40,000. And just the difference between that and what we were paying wasn't affordable, so that one fell through also.
And the third contract was canceled because Robert says they just didn't like the home. So he finds himself continuing to house hunt in a market here in South Florida that's hot and increasingly too out of reach for many working South Floridians.
It's been hard. It's been pretty, my choices are limited because I don't want to go too far because then my commute's going to be more than an hour. And then the closer I get to downtown or where I want to work, the more expensive it gets. So I'm stuck looking in the Kendall area and looking at small apartments.
Robert Leon, our 26-year-old Yahoo employee, does not expect to live in Brickell, South Beach, or Coral Gables, where his job is located. He's willing to commute up to an hour to and from work. He's looking for something up to $160,000, and he expects to be able to afford 20% for the down payment. What Robert is experiencing is a challenge across South Florida, from the Keys to Palm Beach County. Home prices are rising while incomes have been stagnant, driving the economic middle class to delay home buying, stretch beyond their means to get in, or look for housing they can afford in neighborhoods once overlooked. It's been more than a decade since the average household income in Miami-Dade could comfortably afford the average-priced home or condominium. In Broward County, after the bubble burst, the average condo and home became affordable again, but price gains over the past 2 years have made the average Broward home again out of reach for that average income. Our partner, the Miami Herald, looked at sales data, combined that with 2 community attributes many home buyers look for: low crime and good schools. Coming up on today's program, we'll take you to some of those neighborhoods where home prices are rising, sometimes faster than the overall region, but with home values below $400,000, sometimes far below. Nicholas Nehemas is the Miami Herald business reporter behind the story, and he joins us now on the Sunshine Economy. Nick, are there homes that are affordable with average incomes left in South Florida?
There are, Tom, but they're further away than they've ever been from where people actually work and where they go out, and they're also fewer than they've ever been in the past.
This is adding to the so-called cost burden. Ned Murray is the associate director of the Metropolitan Center for Florida International University. We're not just talking about the cost of the home. The cost burden is the cost of transportation, the cost of gas, the cost of time. And how cost burdened is South Florida?
Yes, Tom, the cost burden percentages that we're seeing have risen quite dramatically over the past few years. Here in Miami-Dade, 61% of renters are cost burden and 55% of owners with a mortgage. What's most disturbing about those numbers is that the growing segment within the cost burden number of households is within the 50% or more, which we would consider severely cost burden.
What does cost burden mean? How much of our income are we spending on housing and getting to and from our house?
The threshold that was established by HUD some years ago is that we should not be paying in excess of 30% of our income on housing cost. However, in recent years, we've also added, working with the Center of Neighborhood Technology in Chicago, a housing and transportation cost index with a threshold of 45, so 30 for housing, 15 for
45
transportation.
45 cents of every dollar that we are, our gross income, perhaps more than that, is being spent on getting to and from our house and our house itself.
That's right.
Taxes, insurance, upkeep, all that.
That's right. And if we look to the western suburbs, we're looking at housing and transportation cost indices in the excess of 60 to 65%.
I want to go to Ann Rice, the Florida housing Housing Data Clearinghouse Manager at the University of Florida's Schimburg Center for Housing Studies, has a handle, Ann, on all this data. How has the rebound from the housing collapse impacted home ownership rates in Florida and in South Florida?
Well, we've actually seen a decline in home ownership after the housing boom coming into the bust. There's actually a lot of competition in the rental market. In South Florida, the home ownership rate dropped to about 60% from a high at the mid-decade. But actually, that drop is really masked by our high home ownership rate because we have so many older households. Among younger households, especially, you know, the age of the gentleman you spoke with at the beginning of the show, families with children, we're actually seeing a steep decline in home ownership rates, both because of affordability, and of course, that creates pressures on the rental market, too, and more competition there.
Nick Nehamas with the Miami Herald, as you analyzed these neighborhoods, why did you focus on the price points below $400,000? Why was that an important point?
So we were looking at where, you know, a middle-class couple making the median income for the region could afford to buy, and that was around the $300,000 range. So we also wanted to up that for the very maximum range would be two people with a graduate or professional degree making the South Florida median income could afford around $400,000.
And what you found were those neighborhoods are being pushed further and further from urban centers. Ned Murray with the Metropolitan Center at FIU, why does housing affordability matter?
It matters from the standpoint that many of the key policy issues that face Miami-Dade and South Florida are interconnected. In Miami-Dade, for instance, population growth, residential land use patterns, transportation network, and employment geography are at odds. Oftentimes when we speak of housing and housing affordability, we're speaking of it separate from the local economy, the transportation network, and land use. Those four policy issues have got to be discussed in unison if we're really going to be able to address some of these issues.
But Ann Rice with University of Florida's Schimburg Center, isn't the housing price the housing price? It's a free market. It's buyers and sellers. It's supply and demand. And when there's a tight supply like there is and demand is high, prices are going to rise. So why is affordability a public policy challenge?
Well, what we found is there's real competition between higher-income households and lower-income households. So yes, for those higher-income households, the ones that are able to qualify for a mortgage in today's tightened credit market, I mean, even they, as you hear, are having trouble finding something in the $300,000 to $400,000 range. But that doesn't necessarily drive wages up for preschool teachers, for people who clean hotel rooms, for people who work in retail. Their wages are still stuck in the very low $10 to $12 an hour range. They're not going to be buying a $200,000 house, let alone a $300,000 or $400,000 house. So again, that creates a lot of competition at the lower end the market that you can't necessarily just build your way out of.
Yeah, Ned Murray, isn't this ultimately a conversation about incomes as much as it is about home prices?
It certainly is. When you look at the major occupational groups here in Miami-Dade, office and administrative support, sales and food prep, those occupations comprise roughly 50% of our employment base, and all of those earn wages less than 80% of the median income.
But it's been that way for a good generation. South Florida is built on tourism. It's built on real estate. Those two things have been able to create this sunshine economy that we have in South Florida.
That's true. And up until about a decade ago, housing affordability was not a real issue in South Florida. It was housing conditions.
What drove it to make it an issue? Was it the post-bubble response here or the 2005-2006 skyrocketing of prices?
Yes, it was the external demand that we began seeing as early as 2004. Obviously, really accelerating through 2005 and 2006, but that demand was external. It was external in terms of foreign investment. It was external in terms of northeastern buyers. There was really no other market like it in the United States.
Nick, it sounds like Ned could be describing the market these days too, right? Not just a decade ago, but here in 2015.
Oh, absolutely. It's out-of-town buyers. It's foreign buyers who can, in many cases, offer cash, which sellers much prefer over buyers with mortgages. So they're driving up the prices and squeezing out locals.
Housing affordability here on the Sunshine Economy. Nicholas Nehamas with the Miami Herald, our partner, Ned Murray with the Florida International University, and Ann Ray with the University of Florida. They'll continue with us. Stay tuned. Still to come here on the Sunshine Economy, the frustration and suspense of hoping to become a first-time home buyer in Miami.
Inspection is tomorrow, so I'm nervous about that, but I'm still excited. Just keep thinking of the big backyard. Hopefully not too many big surprises tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy, where we live, housing affordability in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. Financial planners say one of the surest ways over the long term to build wealth is to be a homeowner. It is the biggest investment most Americans will make in their lifetimes. Now, the financial potential, along with the long-held notion of the American dream, including owning your own home, it helps attract renters to become buyers. WLRN's associate producer Julia Duba is one of those hopeful first-time home buyers navigating this market here in South Florida, and she joins us here on the Sunshine Economy. Julia, why do you want to be a homeowner?
Well, you know, beyond the financial reasons that you just mentioned, Tom, as I grew up here in Miami and we sort of moved around a lot, family was renting, and I think that that actually made me want to anchor myself to one place. Beyond that, the financial reasons, putting my money each month toward my own mortgage, building some equity and that kind of thing.
Yeah, looking to make an investment, but also put some roots down in this community where you obviously have roots already, but you grew up in rental housing. You're looking to become a home buyer. Describe the process. You're only 2 months into it.
I was actually about 4 months into renting my current place when I decided I think I'm going to try to buy a home. I live with my boyfriend and we talked a little bit about it, and we both grew up here and we decided we wanted to own a home in Miami-Dade County. And, you know, once that idea came up, we just sort of casually looked online, Zillow, Realtor.com, those kinds of websites.
Get an idea of what the market was out there.
Get a feel for it. And I thought, wow, that's not too bad. And then the problem came when we decided we were going to be first-time homebuyers. I think it was a little unexpected that the options would sort of be fewer.
Has this been a friendly market environment that you and your boyfriend have been navigating? You've been actively looking now for, what, about 6 weeks?
Yeah, about 2 months almost. I've found that the first-time homebuyer will find the South Florida market challenging. Our families are located in like central Miami-Dade County.
Okay.
And I've increasingly found myself looking more north toward Broward or way south toward Homestead.
Driven by what considerations?
Driven by price.
So you were able to find a property that you and your boyfriend were interested in. So tell me about the property.
Yeah, it's a two-bedroom, one-bathroom in North Miami Beach. We went to see the house, and it was really charming. Upgraded kitchen, beautiful backyard. There was a deck in the back and everything. We liked it so much that we decided we were going to put in an offer. And the seller accepted the offer. And I think from that point on, I wasn't quite prepared for the ups and downs of what was to come. And actually, I kept an audio diary of those days. And so here's a glimpse into what those days have been like for me in the last couple weeks.
Buying a home is stressful, but you either get through it stressed.
It's just so frustrating.
It's difficult.
The loan agreement is like 80 pages long.
And there's no wine in the house.
All of these words that are very basic in the real estate world, but that I still don't understand.
I think I get it.
Still don't get it.
I kind of get it. I realize later I don't.
At this point in the day, I don't even want to think about it anymore. I'm just mentally exhausted.
Right, Yugo?
Are you a good boy? That's a good boy.
Looking at my dog, Drogo, right now. Can't wait to get him in that yard. Inspection is tomorrow, so I'm nervous about that, but I'm still excited. Just keep thinking of the big backyard and all the barbecues and the joys of home ownership. Hopefully not too many big surprises tomorrow. I'm not going in thinking everything's going to be perfect and dandy. The house was built in 1954, after all. The only thing I'm worried about at the moment is getting through this process. Okay, I'm on my way home from work. We did the inspection on the house in North Miami Beach, and it was
pretty much falling apart, literally. Termite damage. The inspector even said the pipes are about to burst any day now. The electrical wires and everything were not up to code, apparently. I immediately knew that we would be canceling the contract, which was sad, but at the same time, I just instantly didn't want the house anymore. I wish that I could clone myself and have the clone go through this process and just come back in a month and a half and the house is ready and I can move in December and I will not have had to deal with all of this craziness. We're going to see a townhouse in Davie tomorrow night. It's at the tippy top of our budget, but it is moving ready. The townhouse didn't work out. They didn't take our offer, so we had to walk away because it was at the top of our budget. We went to see a house in Hollywood, but we didn't really like the neighborhood. Went to see another house about a mile away. It was beautiful, it was upgraded, but I'm not sure that we liked the area that much either. Taking it day by day at this point, I'm not sure what is going to happen. I mean, it would be great to have a conventional loan, but I don't understand how people my age or, you know, just people in South Florida in general can afford to save up a 20% down payment so easily. I just want to get through this. Find one place. That's all it needs. That's all it'll take. It'll take one place that works out. Oh, well, just keep going.
Julia, you've gone through a lot in the last 6 weeks. There's no doubt about it. A lot of emotional turmoil, financial education. What would your advice be to sellers in this market?
I would just say to sellers, if you're considering selling your house to a first-time buyer, try not to think of it as a transaction. I think that a lot of first-time home buyers are in it to make a home, not to make an investment. I know that, it must be really difficult as a seller to choose between a first-time buyer and a cash buyer. But, it's really disheartening to be beat out by a cash buyer when you envision yourself in that home, yeah, making a life. It would still be a good sale. And it would also, you could come away from it thinking that someone is making a great use of your home.
It's a powerful emotion when you put yourself into that home, when you're still in the process of trying to buy it. So after this 6 week, 2 month experience, you've gone through the quick education of Julia Duba as a hopeful first time home buyer in Miami, where residential real estate is a blood sport. Are you still as committed to be a homeowner?
I am. I think I came into this with a little bit of an idea that, you know, just a vague idea that this would be difficult, but I still wanted to do it. And I still want to do it now for the same reason. I want to own a home. I want to make a life in a house in Miami-Dade County. So I think, you know, at this point, I'm just taking it day by day, learning as I go and just trying to still make that a reality.
A lot of young professionals in South Florida find themselves in that same position. Ann Ray with the University of Florida's Schimburg Center of Housing Studies. This snapback in home prices we've seen in South Florida especially, how has that affected homeownership among young professionals?
Well, we've definitely seen a drop in homeownership rates among young households in general, particularly but homeowners under age 34, also the Gen Xers at age 35 to 54, we've seen a drop in homeownership. And we've seen that even with families with children who traditionally are moving into homeownership. So there's definitely more competition out there. One thing that her really tough story made me think about is the value of supports for homeowners that can be out there. A good public policy is support to nonprofits and local governments that provide home buyer education, that provide financial counseling, that provide some help for first-time home buyers down payment assistance, to go through what's a very difficult and quick education process. So that's something we can do that really works. And we found that even during the housing boom with prices going up, and even during the foreclosure crisis, that people who had gotten that kind of support were better off, were less likely to default on their loans because they'd had that support going in. But it's very tough.
Ned Murray with the Metropolitan Center at FIU, is that support still there? Is there still a market for that support given some of the double-digit home price appreciations that we've seen in neighborhoods that Nick has detailed in the Herald?
The issue of choice and opportunity is a real issue, and one that needs to be looked at from the lens of creating the spectrum of housing choice and opportunity. By choice, I mean choice of neighborhood, choice of municipality, also choice of housing type. And then on the opportunity side, it's the affordability, but it's also the financing. And that's the real challenge that local governments have, is creating the spectrum of housing choice and opportunity. And it's not just for those earning the median income or less than the median income, but as we're seeing now, we're seeing home buyers challenge who are making upwards of 200% of the median income.
Yeah, when you Nick Nahamas with the Miami Herald, when you look at the median home prices in Dade County and Monroe County and Broward County, the average home price, single family home price, is above the average household income. So even if you're getting above the average household income in your paycheck, you still may be challenged in order to afford the home.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, we're seeing working professionals really struggle to find homes that have the schools and the commute times and, you know, restaurants and nightlife and the kind of stuff that makes people want to buy a home in a neighborhood.
All the social fabric that makes a home a neighborhood and makes a community a community. Still to come on our program here on the Sunshine Economy, touring two of the neighborhoods with decent schools and decent but rising quickly home prices.
In 2012, these houses were selling in the 150s. Now they're selling in the 240s.
You know, you might be able to get lucky and find something in the twos here, but generally something that doesn't need a lot of repair would start in the threes.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We're talking about housing affordability in South Florida with our partner, the Miami Herald. The Herald crunched the numbers, looked at areas with home values below $400,000 in order to capture first-time buyers and those moving up in the market, and then compared the crime data and public school ratings in those neighborhoods. We visited two of the areas with quickly rising home values in Broward County, reflecting buyers have discovered these areas and home sellers are eager to cash in.
In 2012, these houses were selling in the 150s.
That's Diana Cronkite with A-Care One Real Estate. We spoke with her outside the Country Creek development in East Davie.
Now they're selling in the 240s. So you're talking about 60%, 12, 13, 14, 3.5 years. And almost every development I'm going to take you to is that same scenario.
Home and condominium prices in East Davie are rising faster than the Broward County average. It's an area west of I-95, south of 595. Nova Southeastern University and Broward College are big magnets in the neighborhood, drawing in both students and employees. According to the Herald's analysis, school ratings are B or better, and there's a medium crime ranking in the neighborhood.
It's a family neighborhood, big time family. The elementary school is within walking distance. There's a bike path right behind the community that takes you right to the elementary school. They could ride their bikes. So big family neighborhood right here.
Helping push prices up, there simply are not a lot of homes for sale. Earlier this month, Cronkite's office listed a 3-bed, 2-bath home on a Friday. By the following Tuesday, it already had two offers. The asking price was $234,900.
Did you get asking price?
I can't tell you that. But I can be sure, you can be sure it was either asking price or above if we got an offer in 2 days.
You know, the price pops in East Davie extend beyond single-family homes. Townhomes and condominium values have jumped, too, far above the average price appreciation throughout Broward County.
The townhomes I'm going to take you to next, townhomes of Orange Drive, which are almost right next door, 137 in 2012. Now they're 175, 6.
That's a 27% jump in 3 years. So we got in the car and headed a few blocks east to see that community.
For these townhomes here in East Davie that have seen that kind of price appreciation, who's buying?
Townhomes and condos, a lot of the college students and their parents are buying those up. And single people, a lot of single folks.
10 miles northeast is the Tarpon Springs neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale. The New River runs on the north and west borders to the area, just tucked in south of the Broward Center for the Performing Arts. Susie Sabree is one of the newest homeowners in this neighborhood, buying the house she had been renting.
We got this house for a really good price, so... yeah, it's pretty affordable. It's not a lot of crime or, you know, random hoodlums walking around or anything like that, yeah. Especially because it's close to downtown and you don't get all that riffraff. That's really nice.
Tarpon Springs is another neighborhood with at least B-rated public schools and home prices rising faster than the county average in Broward. The median home value here is $320,000. Peter Lemieux has lived in the area for 20 years and is a realtor with Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate.
You do have waterfront properties here. You have properties off of Coconut Drive here that are all on the water. And, you know, they just, it's been a sought-after neighborhood for quite some time. And, you know, people are friendly here. They like being here.
It's a mix of housing stock in the Tarpon Springs neighborhood. From one- and two-story homes from the 1950s to its 10-story building just a couple of blocks from the neighborhood with one-, two-, and three-bedroom apartments, rents there going for upwards of $1,800 per month.
The market is very strong right now, so it is on the rise. But people are buying some houses in here. They're fixing them up, and they're selling them and actually realizing a profit on these houses. You know, you might be able to get lucky and find something in the twos here, but generally something that doesn't need a lot of repair would start in the threes, you know, mid threes, low threes to mid threes, and it goes up from there. You have waterfront property that's well over $1 million.
Realtor Peter Lemieux in the Tarpon Springs neighborhood of Fort Lauderdale. Our thanks to the Miami Herald's Lance Dixon for production assistance there. Still to come on our program, two neighborhoods in Miami-Dade County experiencing double-digit price spikes.
6-7 years ago, we had a ton of foreclosures. But right now, it's pretty stable.
It's a rental area, basically. And a lot of people around here, they are no middle class, but no low income.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy talking about housing affordability in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. How do you afford the mortgage or the monthly rent? Let us know on Twitter at WLRN. Use the hashtag Sunshine Economy. Wesley Uowa has been selling homes in the West Flagler neighborhood since becoming a broker back in 2007. Now, this area is filled with concrete block single-family homes built in the years after World War II, as Miami experienced one of its first building booms. It's just north of Coral Gables, south of the Dolphin Expressway, and west of Little Havana. As Uowa was beginning her career in real estate, she experienced the wave of foreclosures in West Flagler, brought on by the bursting of the housing bubble and the evaporation of home values. But since then, prices have shot up.
Prices have pretty much doubled. 6-7 years ago, we had a ton of foreclosures, a ton of people losing their homes. You did have investors back then, and they were just buying rentals or buying some investment properties to remodel and flip. But right now, it's pretty stable. You can't find as much foreclosures as you would even 2-3 years ago. It's mostly all regular sales.
The median price of a single-family home in this area, West Flagler, is up 16.5% over the past year. We met outside a home she has listed for $315,000.
We are now in the West Flagler neighborhood. Real estate brokers call it the Southwest area. It's north of Coral Gables, south of the Dolphin Expressway. We're at 220 Southwest 51st Court. Mid-century home, concrete block construction. It is a beige color on the outside, tile walkway, and we walk in a beautiful high-gloss oak floor that is original to the home. 1947 is when this home was built. It is originally a two-bedroom, one-bath, and the one-bathroom, as I walk into it here, it's in nice shape. It's kind of a light peach color with black and peach tile, and all original fixtures here that are all in good shape, and original tile floor as well. Grout looks good. Towel bar is original. The doorknobs, boy, these old brass doorknobs are beautiful. So the two bedrooms are fair sized, probably about 10 feet by 12 feet for each of them. A faux marble fireplace in the main living space. And then it was originally a one-car garage, which has been converted into living space with a tile clay floor. The kitchen, it's here in the back, relatively small, but granite countertops and electric range and oven and refrigerator and a small dishwasher. Nice white cabinetry, good neutral colors. And I'll walk out the back door, and we're greeted with two mango trees, one right in the middle, a nice sized yard here. This home is for sale for $315,000 here in the West Flagler neighborhood. It is being sold by a mother and daughter who have owned the home for several years. This neighborhood has seen some pretty significant price appreciation with its single-family home housing stock, as well as its proximity to Coral Gables and the Dolphin Expressway.
Just to the northeast of West Flagler is a tougher neighborhood with higher crimes and worse schools, but the Alapatta area is home to some of the fastest rising home prices in Dade County, up 24% in the past year. Our first stop had been a duplex on 25th Avenue, but the day we visited, the duplex was a heap of rubble on the ground as a backhoe picked at it, dumping it into trucks to cart it away. An investor had bought the property and was tearing down the home.
Hey, Tom Hudson.
We met George Ortiles there. He works with InvestQuest Partners, a group that bought this property, and which has invested about $75,000 so far between buying the property and the cost to tear it down.
What attracted you to this neighborhood for this piece of property, though?
It's a rental area, basically. And a lot of people around here, they are no middle class, but no low income. They are between lower and middle class. So people, especially for new properties, if we build for new property, we're going to have a lot, me as a realtor, we're going to have a lot of applications for the new property.
They want a lot of renters for those new properties. They plan on building rental units, betting the boom that has happened in Wynwood will stretch west across I-95 into Alapatta, fueled by the neighborhood's proximity to the health district around Jackson Memorial Hospital, the Design District, and the Miami River. Because of that proximity, it's an old neighborhood by South Florida standards. The age and the condition of the housing stock means prices are low by Miami standards, under $125,000 for an average single-family home. We saw this at a tough-looking home Artiles' group purchased on Northwest 34th Street, just west of 22nd Avenue.
I've just walked into the single-family home here at 2224 Northwest 34th Street in Alapatta, the neighborhood in Miami. It is beige stucco on the outside, pretty run down. The front yard is pretty patchy grass. You walk in through the center door, and you can tell we've got a couple of bedrooms, very tiny bedrooms, on either side of the entrance hallway. Bedrooms measure maybe 6 feet by 8 feet, clearly added on probably a front porch originally when this home was first built. But boy, this wood floor underneath me, you can tell this wood floor has been original. It's 8-inch wide plank, probably Dade County pine, but it has seen better days. Very scarred and marked up. Lots of dirt, lots of potholes, lots of divots in this floor. It'll be tough to try to save any of this floor. Here in the main living space, there's a ceiling fan. There's a window to one of the bedrooms that is drywalled halfway with some board. The window itself to the outside is just boarded up. There actually is a window here, however. Unlike in the kitchen, as we walk into here, it's a pretty decent-sized kitchen for a small family of three, maybe. No kitchen sink. There is a refrigerator. It's an old Whirlpool side by side, but clearly has not been used for a good long time. No stove, no oven, no microwave. The wall cabinets and the floor cabinets do not match. The floor in here, again, even worse shape, this Dade County pine. The window in the kitchen to the side of the house is missing. It is boarded up, however. The back door is screwed shut, it looks like. And then in the back of the kitchen here is another bedroom with a tile floor. This bedroom has a window missing entirely. In fact, a piece of plywood that is covering up the window opening, the top 6 inches, are open to the elements. It's a one-bath, five-bedroom place now, as it's been reconfigured by previous owners. In the main master bedroom into the bathroom here, tile floor again, windows boarded up. And you can see, in fact, in some places, spots of the original concrete block construction being exposed. Has been, looks like, converted to central air. There's a box for the air conditioner, although the unit itself is absent, is missing. And here in the back, this floor looks to be in pretty tough shape. I'm not even going to stand on it for fear it may break through in some places.
Now, the investment group that bought the house expects to put about $40,000 worth of repairs into it in hopes of renting it for $1,800 a month. That would take an annual income of $54,000 to comfortably afford. That's about twice what the average is in that neighborhood in Alapata. I want to go to Ann Rice again with the University of Florida's Schimburg Center for Housing Studies. You've looked at rental market. Rents in South Florida are up by at least 5% in Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and Boca compared to a year ago. What's the cost burden that's being put on renters due to not only rising prices, but also investment activity?
Well, as Ned said earlier, we're seeing people paying 50% of their income for their house, for their rent, and that includes both their rent costs and their utilities. And we see that price going up and that cost burden level going up. We're also seeing that households that have higher income, you know, still modest incomes, but not the lowest income, are experiencing cost burden in a way they weren't before. And when people are paying more than half, you know, as much as 75% of their income for their housing, it's tough to have enough left over for food, for medical care, for transportation, even just the basics, because your rent is something you have to pay in full every month.
Yep, it zaps a lot of consumer purchasing power. Ned Murray with the Metropolitan Center of Florida International University. Is this trend sustainable, though? When we look at the investment market in real estate for rentals, is that kind of price appreciation on not only the homes but also the rents sustainable?
It really isn't. And when you're talking 140,000 renters here in Miami-Dade paying in excess of 50% of their income on rent, you know what the challenge is. And we know, going back to the original bubble back in 2005 and 2006, that once the level of cost burden reached that 50% level, both in terms of owner and renter households, we began to see people begin to leave the area, not only in Florida, going to northern Florida, but to other parts of the southeast and other parts of the United States.
Housing affordability leading to a brain drain. Still to come on the Sunshine Economy, we hear from a home builder.
Does affordability matter to a home builder like yourself?
No.
We're back on the Sunshine Economy, talking about housing affordability in South Florida. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. More than 5,000 families in the region are living in homes built by Craig Perry. He grew up in what was unincorporated Dade County when land was plentiful. He founded Centerline Homes in 1993, and over the course of the next 20 years, developed and built thousands of homes in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, also in Orlando and in North Carolina. He sold Centerline in 2013 as the home building industry was consolidating in the aftermath of the housing collapse. He sees housing affordability as a competitive issue. There's not enough land to build homes by different companies, which would force those home builders to more actively compete on price.
Does affordability matter to a home builder like yourself?
No.
Why not?
Because all you're doing as a builder, developer, is you're not really looking at the price of the home. You're looking at the return on the investment, and the price is the price. And if the market is willing to bear a higher cost, you're going to sell it for more, so you get a greater return. But you don't look at it as at all into what's affordable or not.
That may be an unpleasant reality of the market in South Florida, as we are squeezed between the Atlantic Ocean and the Everglades.
It's not necessarily related to the builder, and I think it always is perceived that the builder causes the problems, but they can also be a part of the solution.
It's a question of supply and demand for Craig Perry, Economics 101.
Interestingly enough, there is opportunities happening in the middle and the lower end. They're not areas necessarily where you would think that they would work, but they're areas that people are being forced to go to just because there is no other alternative.
By areas, you mean neighborhoods?
Neighborhoods. And so you're on the fringes, so you're getting into skipping the A neighborhoods, and now you're going to the BC neighborhoods, and most of those neighborhoods are getting completed now. And so the question is, will the buying market go to the CD neighborhoods? And an example of that would be there was a push at some time where Port St. Lucie started to work because it was an affordability market and people were willing to drive because that was the only place they could afford a home. And I'm not sure if that or when that comes back.
Do you think the affordability challenge has slowed down growth in South Florida?
You have to look at how many units were built in any given year on for sale product versus what's being built today. And the issue is that most of the product being delivered is for rent type product and not really related to for sale type product. And we're definitely way below where I believe that the average was if you looked at it over a 20-year period of time, and I just don't know when that ever comes back or if it ever can come back, just because until they solve the supply-side issue, then you're kind of stuck where you're at.
What that means is the supply of land on which to build new homes here in the region. People continue moving to South Florida in droves. In addition, there's investor interest and the ever-present image of South Florida, especially Miami, as a relative financial safe haven compared to the political hotspots around the globe, like Venezuela and Russia, and economic troubled spots like Argentina and Brazil. Now, that increases demand on the South Florida housing market, either for those who need a place to live and want to buy, or those looking for an asset in which to stash their cash, like a rental property. All of this higher demand raises prices with little new land available for development in South Florida for homes.
When you look and you can kind of see land every which direction, and you don't really necessarily know what can be done with that land. And so most of the product and land that's left is very, very expensive to build and very challenging to look at. They've had some good successes with creating urban centers and Dadeland, but I'm not sure if you could take and create that same kind of urban setting and environment down in Homestead or Ojas or whatever marketplaces are out there. I just don't think people are going to be willing to either pay the rents or what the for sale product will ultimately end up being. When all the product that's delivered in downtown Miami is delivered and a lot of these places don't have parking and the road network system isn't really fixed at this point. And until they really get a hold of that, I think the affordability is just not going to be there in the not so distant future.
Craig Perry, founder and former CEO of Centerline Homes. Ned Murray, the associate director of the Metropolitan Center at Florida International University. Let me put this to you. Where is the balance between the market rate, what the market can bear versus supply and demand, and public policy when it comes to housing affordability?
Well, the public policy response here in South Florida needs to begin at looking at other regions of the country, looking at high-performing economies, San Francisco, Seattle, Denver, Boston. All these areas have realized themselves that in order to sustain their own economies, they had to create opportunities to create affordable housing.
But some of those are even higher cost burden than we have here in South Florida, San Francisco especially.
That's correct. But obviously the incomes are much larger, so we in fact see smaller gaps. But it's a real issue, and they've understood that in terms of creating the high performing economies that they do have in place by creating transportation networks with transit oriented development, equitable transportation oriented development, with funding coming from various sources through public private partnerships that have been created for some time. So that's the example that I think South Florida could look at.
Ann Ray with the University of Florida Schimburg Center for Housing Studies. Is this a sustainable trajectory, this housing cost burden, this affordability gap that we have here in South Florida, as we look at other metropolitan areas that have experienced something similar, San Francisco being one, New York and Boston being a couple of others? What are some of the solutions that could be on the table for us?
You know, I do think we have the risk of a brain drain, and we need to look to those high-cost areas. In part as an example of a problem that could be coming our way. One thing I think is really important is to hold the line on the investment that we do have in affordable housing. And there we don't have to look to other places. Florida has had one of the largest state housing trust funds in the country that funds affordable housing development and funnels a certain amount of that money to local governments for both rental and affordable homeownership opportunities. So holding the line on what we have here and continuing to be an innovator right here in Florida is very important.
Holding the line on public policy, Nicholas Nehemas with the Miami Herald, the business reporter. Potential homeowners would love to hold the line on prices, but the sellers and the builders and the investors aren't interested in that at all.
No, I mean, homeowners are really in a tough, or prospective homeowners are really in a tough spot in South Florida. The price increases are slowing down, which is a positive sign. Foreign buyers, their currencies are in trouble, so they're less interested in buying, but I really don't see an end to this just on the horizon. This is going to be a struggle for the region for the next few years.
That's Nicholas Nehemas, a business reporter with our partner, the Miami Herald. Ned Murray, associate director for the Metropolitan Center at Florida International University. Thank you, Professor Murray. Nice to see you again. And Ann Ray with the Florida Housing Data Clearinghouse Manager. She's at the University of Florida's Schimburg Center for Housing Studies, joining us here from Gainesville. Thanks to all three of you. In real estate, it is location, location, location. That location for South Florida drives our economy, no doubt about it. Housing here is caught between the global success that South Florida is as a location to live, work, and play, and the reality of stagnant wages that comes with those jobs. In combination, it can make for a tough market to find and afford something to call your own. Wanda Miles is our technical director on the Sunshine Economy. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired, she needs a rest. The kids are playing up downstairs. Sister's sighing in her sleep. Brother's got a date to keep. He can't hang around.